Chapter 34. The change was instantaneous. One moment she was plunging through the air seeing faint stars against city glare, the next, the witchblade had expanded to enclose her entire body in a multifaceted carapace with a series of extensions, like dogwood petals, facing the earth. It sprouted from her skin like dandelion spores. Her way too expensive Prada jeans ripped. Her leather jacket shredded. Sarah instinctively twisted, watching the great void rush to her face. The dogwood petals swung around and covered her front, extending, extending. The petals collapsed. She struck with a sense of rapid deceleration followed by an elastic rebound. She bounced, spinning gracefully through the air, the dogwood petals sprouting again and dancing around her body so that they always faced the earth. The second arc ended on a pile of steel girders which would have cruelly broken an unprotected body. The series of petals formed a heavy cilia which absorbed the collision and pushed away, not so spectacularly this time. She tucked into a roll and landed lightly on her feet, breathing hard. "Thank you," she whispered. She was standing in the basin of the excavation, some 30 feet below street level, surrounded by steel and concrete infrastructure, warm breeze chilling her newly exposed body. The witchblade had done a sushi chef on her clothes. She now wore her Skechers, white low-rise hipster briefs, a thin strand of denim around her waist, her leather belt with badge, and a sports bra which she had had the good sense to don earlier, expecting action. The chill in the air was evident. The corners of the huge excavation receded into blackness. Looking up, she saw the outline of the crane stark against the city lights. Blood dribbled at her feet. Something grew out of the sky, a moat expanding to fill her vision. She jerked back just in time to avoid being struck by a falling body. The wiry one, Benito, with the hole in his ribs. A shudder rippled through her as she recalled the feeling of her finger poking through his side. "Look out!" someone shouted from atop the crane. Her right hand jerked out, grabbed the ridge of a steel beam, and yanked her out from under a heavy piece of meat as it whipped by, grazing her cheek with blood. She stared down. The head and one shoulder of her primary assailant. She stared, trying to make sense of what she saw. Twinkle Toes had been cleaved in two as neatly as a piece of prime porterhouse at the hands of a butcher. As she stared in horror at the cross-section of anatomy, dark organs oozing black, the other half dropped, one leg bouncing like a chorus line. The two parts of Chango lay together like the aftermath of a train wreck. Sarah looked up. Something glinted in the city light. A sword. A tiny figure held onto the girder with one hand and looked down. "Sarah? Oh my god. Sharp. Where had he come from? He could not possibly have seen what happened to her, and had to assume she was dead. The construction site stank of setup. If Sharp had been there all along, why hadn't he come to her aid before this? Unless he wanted her dead. For whose benefit was he pretending remorse? She could have said something. She could have called out to him, "Sharp, I'm all right." She held her tongue, wanting to see how he'd react to her amazing disappearing body. Where had Sharp come from? Where had that sword come from? What was he doing, moonlighting as a security officer, carrying a samurai sword? Was he nuts? Was he a psycho killer? She could hear him on his cell phone calling for an ambulance. As Sharp turned and headed for the vertical strut, a vehicle squealed its tires. Sarah stared at the neatly severed corpse and shuddered. That certainly answered one question. Was Sharp capable of cleaving a man in two? He'd just done it. Not even the isthmus of the neck. Straight across the continent, Portland to Miami. She could hear him descending the ladder with an occasional clank as his hardware hit the steel. She burrowed back into an alcove formed by the juxtaposition of the steel beams and an immense spool of wire. Sharp appeared at the edge of the excavation, looking for a way down. He spotted a series of ladders descending in three stages, with scaffolding at the intervals, and came quickly down, something long, dark, and narrow strapped to his back. When he reached the bottom, he turned on a flashlight and strode swiftly, lightly to where the severed corpse lay. He shined the flashlight all around, unconcerned with his handiwork. The beam touched briefly on a third body, the one the witchblade had hurtled to the ground. "No, not the witchblade. Sarah and the witchblade. Sarah?" he said tentatively. "Behind you." He whirled, keeping the light low until it found her feet. "Thank God. I'm so sorry, this is all my fault. I saw you fall. I need clothes." The flashlight lingered a second on Sarah's exquisite form, then switched off. "Right. Wait here a minute." Sharp scrambled up the scaffolding like a lemur, returning minutes later with a soft cotton sweatshirt and sweatpants, intended for a much bigger person. Sarah put them on and emerged resembling a moving pile of laundry. Where were you while those Ebolas were chasing me up the crane?
I was in the control booth.
Then why in heaven's name didn't you do something?
I wasn't conscious.
You weren't conscious?
I know how that must sound.
Listen, it's a long story. I called you down here because I learned something that may be pertinent to your investigation.
I am so sorry about what happened.
Listen, I have a problem.
I had a blackout.
I've been suffering from blackouts off and on, for about a year now.
Excuse me?
Periods of time I can't account for.
It doesn't happen often.
I should probably see a doctor or something, but I don't want to get stuck at a desk.
Stuck at a desk?
Man, you're lucky you're not in Bellevue. How did you ever get by the screening board?
You know, they were so desperate for new blood after the towers, and let's face it, I have impressive credentials.
My problem has never before interfered with my job.
This is the first time, and I'm so sorry.
Derek, you've got a lot of explaining to do.
You cut that kid in half like a breakfast sausage.
You think that doesn't make you a suspect?
What are you doing with that thing anyway?
They could hear the sirens rising in the distance.
When you didn't hear sirens, that was a rarity.
I'll tell you.
What are you going to say happened?
Exactly what happened.
Sharp gestured to her hand.
Including that?
Sarah looked down and was surprised to see her right hand still enclosed in the spiny alien gauntlet.
Go away, she willed.
It obediently morphed into the simple bracelet.
Sharp stared.
I didn't see that.
No, you didn't.
You going to tell me how you survived that fall?
Maybe.
Okay, mutual defense pact.
He pointed up.
You see that guy wire, running between the steel frame and the edge of the pit?
That's how the gangbanger got cut in two.
And as to how you survived the fall, you see that pile of dirt?
He gestured to a mound of freshly excavated earth the size of a small house.
Sarah nodded tersely.
The ambulance arrived accompanied by a squad car.
Sharp shined his flashlight up at them and waved.
Down here.
5 minutes later, two EMTs with a folding stretcher reached the bottom, followed by two uniformed cops from the 19th.
When they reached Sharp, he no longer had the sword.
One cop took Sharp aside.
The other questioned Sarah.
She'd seen him before, his name was O'Malley and he was nearing the end of his 20-year stretch.
Sarah told her story, omitting the witchblade.
I lost my grip.
Fortunately, I landed on that pile of dirt and rolled down the side.
It broke my fall.
O'Malley looked from Sarah to the huge mound and back.
You're the freak detective.
I'm just unlucky.
Or maybe I'm lucky.
One or the other.
And how'd this boyo get cleaved in two like a piece of pork loin?
He fell on a guy wire.
O'Malley followed her finger, shone a light on the taut cable.
Jesus Mary and Joseph, ain't this one for the books.
It would never stand up to good police work.
A good cop would haul the wire down and try to match DNA samples.
But there were no DNA samples on the cable, because Chango had never touched it.
Fortunately, the cable was close enough to where the kid had landed as to be plausible.
Given a choice, New York cops did not want to believe in Godzilla, the Tooth Fairy, or leprechauns.
Okay, maybe leprechauns.
By providing a plausible scenario, Sharp had done their work for them.
They weren't going to push themselves out of shape to prove the deaths of a handful of miserable gangbangers was anything but divine justice.
Benito was easily explained.
He'd landed on a rebar mounted in the concrete foundation.
More cops and techs began to arrive.
Four of them climbed the crane tower with a portable stretcher into which they strapped the hapless Sammy, who was babbling for crack.
As a witness, he was in no position to contradict anything Sarah or Sharp had said.
He'd spent the fight writhing on the floor of the platform.
Finally they were done.
It was 10:30.
Leaving her motorcycle locked to the command trailer's butane tank, she accompanied Sharp across the street to a chock full of nuts where they got coffee and sat opposite each other in the church pew booth.
Sarah regarded the tall cop opposite.
He had to sit sideways to get his legs under the table.
He looked like a fashion model.
He suffered from blackouts, as if his body were being borrowed.
Where's your sword?
How'd you survive that fall?
Sarah smacked her fist on the table.
Sharp looked down at the gaudy bracelet.
Sarah tapped it with her left index finger.
See this? You hear funny stories about me when you got here?
That I'm a freak magnet?
It's because of this thing.
What is it?
That is a really good question.
Some kind of alien slash biotech slash magic slash parasite that's invaded my body.
No, parasite isn't the right word.
Symbiote.
I call it the Witchblade.
As far as I know, it predates recorded history.
It's sort of a cross between a Swiss Army knife and the bad Terminator from T2. Sharp stared at the bracelet. Gently, he extended a finger and touched it, leaving a faint moist outline that disappeared as they watched. "Why do you call it the Witchblade?" "That's what it asked to be called." Their eyes met. Sarah noticed that Sharp's were an unusual hazel. "It speaks to you? Sometimes. How did you get it?" "You remember Kenneth Irons, the auction he tried to hold a couple years ago at the Rialto? I was in Yokohama at the time, but I think I read something about it. Big gang land slaying." "Yup. I was there, undercover. Irons was auctioning off this artifact which allegedly conferred invulnerability on the wearer, but he didn't know the damn thing had a mind of its own. The stakeout went south, big time. My partner, Michael Yi, and I were both shot. I was dying. The Witchblade came to me. It chose me. It saved my life, but I wasn't able to save Yi." "Jesus Christ," Sharp whispered, eyes wide. "So, you always moonlight with a sword? Security is mostly long stretches of inactivity. I like to work out on my own. I practice kendo and iaido, you know. I saw you do a number on Bratton the other night. You were there? Why'd you call me down here, Derek? Do you know anything about swords?" he asked. "A little." She refrained from blinking. "I've always been fascinated with them," Sharp continued. "You know Adrian Hecht has been searching for a particular sword. A Muramasa," Sarah interjected. Sharp's eyebrows did a complex pas de deux. "This is a huge deal in the world of collectors. Most famous sword maker in history? Most experts think the Muramasa of the 1300s never existed. They think he was a mistake made by early sword book writers in the 1500s, since there are none of his blades existent today. For sword people, proving he existed by finding his greatest sword would be like a UFO nut finding the Roswell spaceship in a government warehouse somewhere. It would be about as big a deal as you could have short of aliens landing on the White House lawn. Both Bachman and Chalmers claimed to have documented Muramasas in their collections. Those are later Muramasas. The thief can't tell the difference until he has the sword in his hands. The sword Hecht seeks is called Skyroot, and was made for a rogue samurai named Udo." "I'm familiar with Udo." Sharp regarded her with hooded eyes. "You have done your homework." "It's my case. I took this after-hours gig because I think Hecht's the samurai killer. I thought of that myself, but come on. The guy's a bazillionaire. Why would he get his own hands dirty? He could snap his fingers and have a dozen hitmen at his beck and call. Hecht's not a gangster. He doesn't know those people. But he is ruthless, and totally obsessed with acquiring Skyroot. Well, guess what? The reason I asked you to meet me was to tell you that he's got it. It arrived 2 nights ago and he's showing it at his party next week.